Shalom LaYudim, Shalom LaBnei Noach, Shalom LaGoyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Tesvav B'Menachem Av, Tavshinayin Hei, Parashas V'Eschanan, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 30 July, 2015. Webcasting from Little Israel, home of the most provincial Jews in Jewish history. So, after a day of pushing and shoving at Beit El and in Sanur too, I think, between mostly young people and soldiers and police and a handful of arrests and bruises, the bulldozers came yesterday and knocked down those two small garden apartment-type buildings in Beit El, apartments for 24 families, as simultaneously the Prime Minister signed off on building 300 new apartments, dozens in Beit El, Gilo, and other established communities. This is reminiscent of the Keystone Cops. I know the people in Beit El, though, and truth be told, I'm not surprised. That whim that I've not seen contested is that when construction began on these buildings, in fact, the proper permits had not been given. They were only just recently given. And it does not surprise yours truly that the Beit El movers and shakers, like other Israelis, bulldoze themselves forward in the process, thumbing their nose at authority, which led to this fiasco. In other words, I do not subscribe to the view that in this case the court is 100% the bad guy and wrong, and Beit El and the contractor is as pure as the driven snow. Both sides in this country need work. The Edmund Levy Report, he of blessed memory, late Supreme Court judge, said, and yesterday Ministers of Justice Ayelet Shaked said, in the same spirit, that the clash in Beit El calls for having a different court judge such cases and not the high court. As such, real estate disputes are adjudicated in lower courts all over the country. Indeed, the problem with Israel's monochromatic liberal and leftist high court is their provincial misreading of their jobs. They think they are elected to be the Sanhedrin, the wise ones of the people, but that clashes with the notion of a judge in a secular democratic society, which they aspire to. Our judges think they're there to pronounce the highest wisdom and morality to the people, when that's not the role of a Supreme Court judge in a democracy. In a democracy, it's the people who decide via their representative social and foreign policy, like how to deal with Judea and Samaria, that's foreign policy, not the court. It's unheard of, for example, in the history of the United States Supreme Court, I think, that the panel ever sat in judgment on army tactics on the ground in battle. Never happened. The previous judge here, Chief Justice Aharon Box, said everything is justiciable, when that simply cannot be true. The role of a judge is like that of a referee in a football game or on a basketball court. His job is not to direct the course of the game in favor of one side or the other, but to see that the players play by the rules. I agree with Ayelet Shaked and Edmund Levy's report that another court should deal with such cases, because I think the question of settlements is a foreign policy issue for the people and the people's elected government to decide. It's not for the court to make decisions about how to handle this territory. Which brings up a deficit in Israel since 1967, which is the refusal by Israel as a collective to decide what to do with this land, and refusal above all to plant its flag and declare the spoils of war 1967 as Israel's moral and legitimately right property. And no government in the world has the right to tell us that we cannot live in peace in our communities built on barren land, displacing no one, which also happens to be located on one historic site after another mentioned in our Bible, like Beit El, like Shiloh, like Eli. Who has the right to tell us Judea and Samaria are off limits to Jewish life and communities? Judea and Samaria have become the last specks of inhabited dry land on the planet, where it's not only permitted but praiseworthy to declare this territory is off limits to Jews. No Jews allowed. After the Second World War, one of its odd results was a wave of anti-Semitism in the States, written about by Laura Z. Hobson in her novel, made into a movie, Gentleman's Agreement, starring the then-unknown Gregory Peck. In that period in history, real estate advertisements would advertise homes for sale in such a town or township, and at the bottom in small print it would say, a restricted community, which was code for no Jews allowed. And here in the year 2015, this is Auschwitz plus 70. The international consensus is that Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria are illegal in international law, which is a statement, when you think about it, that is simply idiotic. History is the record of constant wars between peoples, which commonly end with a redrawing of the borders between them. For example, after the Mexican War with the United States, 1846-1848, the victorious United States bit off and kept maybe half of Mexico as it was at that time. That's why the American West to this day is one Spanish place name after another. The professors of political science at University of Southern California in L.A. or UC Berkeley on San Francisco Bay may gnash their teeth every Tuesday and Thursday over Israel's illegal occupation of the occupied Palestinian territory, but if so, they are the world's biggest hypocrites for living on and making a nice living on occupied Mexican territory. And if they were honest, they would get the hell out of California. Indeed, what was taken from Mexico was millions of square miles. After World War II, the Czechs and the Poles and the Germans had new boundaries drawn, and what do you know, the Germans lost territory, some 44,000 square miles. The Russians as well redrew their western boundary and gobbled up what used to be Polish land. But for the Jews to keep the measly 2,000 square miles of Judea and Samaria, no, no. That would be proof that they are racist, imperialist, fascist aggressors against the Palestinian people. And this is the people, of course, that was perfectly absent from the struggle until the 1970s. The United States kept half of Mexico. Every other victor kept the spoils, but not Israel. Israel uniquely must return every square meter it took from the Arabs in 1967. That is why yesterday, when the Prime Minister announced 300 new apartments, the EU yowled at this policy that shows Israel not wanting the two-state solution. In other words, Israel is alone in thinking it has the right to keep any of the land it took in 1967. The EU says no. The UN says no. His Muslim magnificence, Barack Hussein Obama, says no. Israel must retreat to the 1967 lines, or there'll be no peace. The Goyim have been telling us where we can and cannot live in this life for thousands of years, and they're still at it. It's like an addiction they can't shake. They have declared Judea and Samaria off limits to Jews. No Jews allowed. All this land is recognized by the International Brotherhood of Nations via their one-world government as the occupied Palestinian territory. In other words, if Israel thinks it can bargain back some of the land taken in 1967, Israel's mistaken. It's now the international consensus that the West Bank is ancient Palestinian territory, and there's nothing to bargain over. In 1967, by contrast, the international media, in a very different climate vis-a-vis Israel, celebrated little Israel's amazing victory, its entry into what later would be known as the West Bank. Israel was celebrated for its victory over its Arab neighbors. Israel's survival and spectacular military prowess was, over those 6 days, like a cliffhanger, a Hollywood movie in which, in the end, the hero and the heroine are snatched from the jaws of death at the last moment. The world was in awe, no less, of the behavior of Israelis post-war. How decent they were to the people who just the day before were shrieking slaughter the Jews. In a word, Israel's victory was celebrated. Israel's presence on this land was celebrated. Today, though, That six-day war has been reconfigured. Now we know what was not then known. Now we know it was an act of racist, fascist, imperialist aggression against the Palestinians. I'm dumbstruck sometimes by some of the talkbacks on the Israeli sites by obvious clinical anti-Jew nutjobs, how they programmatically, stereotypically accuse Israel of just walking into Palestine and stealing people's land. It's this political cartoon-like shallowness that calls to mind the very first comment on the very first verse in the Torah by the greatest Torah commentator Rashi, who lived in France in the 11th century. He asks why the Torah, which is primarily a book of law for the Jews, opens with this story of the creation of the universe. And he says there will come a time when the nations will accuse the Jews of having stolen the land from the Canaanites and the Philistines and the other nations. And the answer to that is that God created the land. And in his orchestration of history, he decides who gets to live in it.
Bo, 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 tzairim, bo, v'aray lachem makom, bo, agale lachem makom, shenimtza etzli balev, ha'shchuna sheba gadalti. בואו 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 ותיכנסו אחד מבתי הכנסת המתרוקנים שם לאחרונה אם תבואו לפנות ערב לעת שקיעה תתפסו אותם אולי בשעת מנחה אז בואו 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 צעירים לכו תגידו מנחה תשלימו מניין לזקנים האחרונים של השכונה שם, ליד שלום פלאפל, או למטה יותר בסמטה, בואו לעת שקיעה. בואו! זכר זקי, ברנדי. את האנשים הפשוטים, אלה שבשוק עובדים, אלה שילדיהם עברו מזמן לשיקונים בפרברים, הבאים לבית כנסת, שנפטר לו עלינו אחד ההורים. לכו תראו שם, איך שיושבים על ספסלים, שהאחים מבוגרים, עם זיפים על הפנים ועם כיפות כאלה שאפשר לראות שהם שמים רק שנכנסים, ואחר כך מורידים, והם אומרים, קדיש על הנפטר, בסוף התפילה, בעמידה, בהכנעה, אולי עם איזו דימה של חרטה, והם אפילו לא יענו לפלאפון שמצלצל פתאום, כי אחד שכח לחבטו, למרות השלט בכניסה. אולי תראו גם, נעלי הבית הפשוטות, הבלויות, המקבטות, שלרוב גם לא מתאימות, וגבות רגליים העייפות של הגבאים, ולא קשה לדעת מי הגבאים, שקומתם תמיד כפופה, והליכתם קצת נמוכה, מתוך צניעות וענווה, אולי מתוך זקנה, אך באמת משום שמחלקים הם כוסות של תה ושל קפה, למתפללים שם כבר 50 שנה. אז בואו, 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 צעירים, בואו והראה לכם מקום. בואו אגלה לכם מקום שנמצא אצלי בלב בשכונה שבה גדלתי בואו, בואו, בואו ותיכנסו אחד מבתי הכנסת המתרוקנים שם לאחרונה ואם תבואו לפנות הערב לעת שקיעה תתפסו אותם אולי בשעת מנחה תגידו מנחה, תשלימו מניין לזקנים האחרונים של השכונה אולי תראו את הזקנות בעזרת נשים איך שהן פללות ללא סידורים אלה שלקרוא אף פעם לא למדו אך לתפילה מוקדם בבוקר כל שני וחמישי כשמוצאים ספר תורה הם התעוררו, אז התעוררו, התעוררו ואולי תראו איך שאחרי התפילה כותפות עלי גפן מהשכנה ממלאות אותם באורז שאחד אחד הם בדקו, אחד אחד הם בדקו, הוי כמה אורז. ותאמינו שהם בדקו בחייהם בסבלנות ואמונה על שרפרף מחוץ לבית או במטבח בעמידה במקום המדיטציות והשיהצו והפסיכולוגים והסדנאות והספרים שכולם בולעים שכותבים לך על עושר ושלווה אבל זה לא בא הביטו בין אנשים צדקניות הכפופות המוקמתות שאף פעם לא זוכות בשום פרס על מפעל חיים אך צריך להודות שרק אלה כמה חיים שהם עשו כי 10 ילדים בחדר אחד קטן גידלו את בעליהם לפני חתונה בקושי הם פגשו, אך שאת האור הזה הם בדקו וניקו, דבר אחד להשאיר שם ביקשו, וזהו אהבה לילדיהן שיחיו, ובעליהן שיחיו, שיחיו. בואו אתם הצעירים המבטיחים, אני רואה אתכם פה בסמטאות מסתובבים, באים והולכים, שמזכירים פה בשכונה דירת חדר ישנה ורעועה, שמעל עדיין גרה בעלת הבית הזקנה בשם סבתא מזה, לא שמחה או טובה או חתום, ימימה, עדינה, אני לא יודע מה. אם היינו רק מעריכים ומאמצים את היופי, התמימות והפשטות שהם שומרים בחייהם עוד מהכפר בצפון עיראק או פרס או קורדיסטן ועמוק בתוך ליבן, כמה שאוהבות אותנו גם. לכו צעירים, לכו, בקרו בית כנסת בשעת מנחה, אני יודע, זה לא פשוט לפתוח את הדלת בפעם ראשונה, אבל תפתחו את הלב לקולו הצרוד של בעל התפילה. ידענו את השמחה שידעו פה הקירות, בבריתות, בר מצוות, שבת חתן, כבר כמה דורות, וילדים שזוחלים על הרצפה, אוספים סוכריה אחר סוכריה, ושמים אותה בסקית הטלית, הריקה של אבא. כאילו ידענו את השמחה, סוכריה אחר סוכריה, סוכריה אחר סוכריה. אז בואו צעירים, בואו ואראה לכם מקום, בואו אגלה לכם מקום שנמצא אצלי בלב, השכונה שבה גדלתי. בואו ותיכנסו לאחד מבתי הכנסת המתרוקנים שם לאחרונה. אם תבואו לפנות הערב לעת שקיעה, תפסו אותם אולי בשעת מנחה.
So this Beit El news story, these hundreds of protesters and hundreds of police and soldiers scuffling and wrestling, but thank God not much more than that. And again, the situation understandably has come to this because Israel has never unequivocally declared rightful legal possession of what for 19 years had been in Jordanian hands, without a peep out of the Goyim, demanding that Jordan create a state for the Palestinians, whose ancient homeland, the Hashemite Kingdom, was in illegal occupation of. We never heard words like that in those days. That's another reason, by the way, to nail down the rightness of Israel's possession and ownership of Judea and Samaria. For 19 years, nobody said a word about any Palestinians pining for a state. And if no such demand was made then, and by that king in Amman, direct descendant of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and no one complained about Jordan's occupation, the claim today that Israel has no right to this land is nonsensical. I once asked an Israeli lawyer as to the foundation of the legal system in this country, and he shrugged and giggled and admitted it's a mishmash of still extant, if you can believe it, Turkish laws and Jordanian laws and British mandatory laws and Jewish laws and Jewish military laws. People of Israel since 1967 have run from the necessity and rightness of declaring full Israeli sovereignty in Judea and Samaria, which is exactly what the League of Nations envisioned. At the founding of the League, there was no country, no jurisdiction called Palestine. for the previous four centuries, the Muslim Turks had no map of Palestine. There was no Sultan of Palestine, no Emir of Palestine. The League created Palestine with its mandate and explicitly in black and white said it was to be a Jewish homeland. Not a word about any Palestinians. At that time, there was no people called Palestinians. And the sky will not fall if Israel declares today Judea and Samaria, rightfully in international law and common sense morality, Israeli property. As for the non-Jews living on it, Israel will study the various systems employed by other nations, such as the United States, whose possessions of Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and Guam and other locales are home to residents who do not have the same rights as Americans living in the 50 established states. A status will then have to be devised to respect these non-Jews as individuals, but they will be denied the right to vote in Israel's Knesset. And if they don't like that, they're free to leave. There are 56 officially Muslim states, 21 officially Arab states, and there will be one officially Jewish state in which the non-Jews in Judea and Samaria will not have the same rights as Jews. Will the world accept such a demarche? When has it ever? With the exception of the spectacular Six-Day War or operation in Uganda in 1976, when has the world ever responded favorably to Israel? The answer to the question is never, and so the world will be angry at Israel again for such a declaration. So what else is new? I mentioned before the stereotypical talkbacks in which the writer is clearly delusional in his vision of Jews as these malevolent creatures. Well, this was also on display in this week's Amnesty International report card on the behavior of our sons fighting and dying last summer to protect their families and friends from a rain of rockets out of Gaza. Yesterday, Amnesty, which originally was a serious organization, no longer is, it's obsessed with Jews, published its study of IDF operations last summer and accused the IDF of, surprise, surprise, war crimes of, quote, displaying a shocking disregard for civilian lives, and close quote, following the ghoulish capture of the corpse of Hadar Golden, Hashem Yikol Damo. The author of the report, one Philip Luther, sounding like his namesake in one of his proto-Hitlerian tirades against the Jews, he said that the IDF, quote, carried out disproportionate or otherwise indiscriminate attacks, which they have completely failed to investigate independently, close quote. Think of what is being said here in the word indiscriminately. I remember an op-ed by that Polish anti-Jew Zbigniew Brzezinski during, I think, the Second Intifada, using the same word to describe IDF soldiers defending themselves from a mob outside of Ramallah. It's an anti-Semitic delusion. When has an Israeli soldier, commonly in the company of other soldiers and officers, ever just started spraying a gathering of Arabs with automatic weapons fire indiscriminately? Sounds like Babi Yar. Soldiers do draw a bead on specific enemies, throwing bricks at them or shooting at them, but indiscriminately shooting Arabs who pose no threat? This is an anti-Semitic caricature. Here's this guy named Luther declaring Israeli soldiers guilty of, quote, a shocking disregard for civilian lives. I guess Mr. Luther never heard of the knock-on-the-roof technique and the sending of cell phone messages to thousands of Arabians in the Gaza Strip to clear out in time, something no other army in history has ever done. This report contains such language as, quote, after Lieutenant Hadar Golden was captured, Israeli forces appear to have thrown out the rule book, employed a gloves-off policy with devastating consequences for civilians, motivated via desire to punish the population of Rafah as revenge for this capture, close quote. How does Mr. Luther know what is in the hearts and minds of the officers to declare that they had a desire to punish the population and that it was revenge? Jews are not entitled to revenge. We don't believe in it. This is simply pathetic in its lack of any balance. Like a referee in a football match who sees only infractions when committed by one side and never the other. It's kind of a hysterical blindness here. Here is Luther pointing the finger of guilt at Israel for taking precautions to protect civilians in Rafah. At the same time, he is completely oblivious, living in a state of oblivion to the fact that Israel was trying to suppress an enemy firing rockets at random at Israeli civilians. Every rocket fired out of Gaza ever into Israel, and there have been thousands of them, has been an attempt to murder Jewish civilians at random. And as the IDF spokesman pointed out, this Amnesty International report barely if ever mentions the Arab aggression, which is wholly directed at Jewish civilians. The hypocrisy here is cosmic, and as such, it's bound up with an age-old, anti-Jew, hallucinatory way of being in the world. Israel remains the target of a timeless, ageless, anti-Jew antagonism, disguised in our time as Palestinian freedom fighting.
Yeah.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Well, this will be an abbreviated webcast because I had the special pleasure today of attending a wedding, the son of a friend, and it was held in Hebron at the cave of the Machpelah, the family plot of the Jewish people. It's always a special experience to pray there. It's always a bit dizzying, sort of like standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon at the mile-high drop point where you look down at the Colorado River way below, more than a mile down. It's sort of like that, praying in the Machpelah, when you feel you are standing on top of almost 4,000 years of history. So that wedding in the city of the Patriarchs was a pleasurable chore today, and also pleasant was the news this week of the Brit Milah, the circumcision of David Chatueli's fifth son. You may remember David from 11 years ago this week, when his pregnant wife Tali and their four daughters were tootling along in the family car in lovely Gaza when slaughtered by Arabs, I think raked by machine gun fire from the side of the road. Afterwards, David remarried, and thank God, yesterday celebrated the bris of his fifth son with his second wife. Life goes on, Jewish life goes on. Lalev Tov v'Shabbat Shalom, Me'eretz Yisrael.
יודו להשם חסדו, ונפלאותיו לבני אדם.